And welcome to the third episode of Carlton International Podcast, where we explore ideas and issues that relate to international research at Carlton University. In this episode, we are going to explore how to make research assessment work for you. And by the way, it's not that scary. This time, I'm interviewing Kristen Barassa, research facilitator in the Faculty of Arts and Social Sciences. And Kristen joined FAS in 2021 with a specific brief to support early career researchers and to explore methods of promoting the value of FAS's research. Her experience and contribution are important not only for FAS, but for all faculties, and in particular, researchers who are putting together their academic CVs. More importantly, today we will be discussing this issue of research assessment, a thorny issue for some, and how this is measured in terms of publications for research, assessment of impact, and the principles that have emerged around DORA, which is the San Francisco Declaration on Research Assessment. I'm happy to introduce you to Kristen. Kristen, over to you. Please introduce us. Please introduce us to yourself. And take it away.
Thanks, Eloise. I'm really excited that we're bringing this conversation to the Carlton International Podcast. So I remember when you and I first started talking about these issues, we kind of called ourselves reluctant facilitators of the conversation. And I don't know about you, but I definitely still feel that way. I can't really believe that I've become a person with strong opinions about research assessment, but apparently I am that person. So how did I get here? Before coming to Carlton, I spent a year and a half at the Federation for the Humanities and Social Sciences, which positions itself as a national advocate for researchers in these disciplines and has, for example, published a report on best practices in assessing research impacts in humanities and social sciences. Prior to that, I worked in countries that take a bit of a different approach to research assessment than what we have here in Canada. So I spent 4 years in Denmark, where I worked with researchers who had been trained in a variety of European countries. And before that, I was in the United Kingdom for 5 years. And this is why I have some familiarity with countries that have a more formalized research assessment framework than we have here in Canada. And by a framework, I mean a system that includes multiple tools for measuring and assessing researchers' activities, for example, at a unit, faculty, or university level, and that is in turn used for benchmarking. So I'm not necessarily saying that having a system like this is either a good thing or a bad thing, but it does make for a different, and I think arguably more transparent approach to how research is assessed at an institutional level. And one of the things that I started noticing when I first moved back to Canada was that these systems, for example, we might think of the United Kingdom's Research Excellence Framework, or REF, can have quite a negative reputation. People sort of run away if you mention them. It's like the screaming face emoji you see on people's faces. But sometimes people aren't fully understanding kind of what is behind all of that. So I started noticing that I was having a lot of conversations in which people would equate REF with bibliometric data gathering and citation data, and people were justifiably concerned because this doesn't really work for all disciplines in the same way that it might work for others. But actually, citation data is just one tiny part of three different components of the UK's framework, and even within the framework, it is used in some disciplines and not others, and where it is used, it's done with a note of caution. So one of the things that really matters to me is that we're able to recognize that there are multiple tools available for assessing and describing the work and impact of researchers, and the value of having a varied toolkit to work with. But I do think that having one makes for a different and arguably more transparent approach to how research is assessed at an institutional level than what we're currently experiencing here. And one of the things that kind of sparked, I guess, my interest in this area here at Carlton is when I first moved back to Canada and I would talk to people about some of these issues, and people would bring up especially the United Kingdom's Research Excellence Framework, or REF, with kind of a screaming face emoji on their faces. It has quite a negative reputation, which I understand entirely, but I found that sometimes this was built on an incomplete understanding of how the system works. So people were really equating REF with citation data and bibliometric data gathering, and we're worried because this method is not necessarily appropriate for all disciplines. But actually, that's only a tiny part of how the ref works, and there are some disciplines within ref where you're not actually allowed to use that data. So I guess what I realized is that one of the things that really matters to me when we think about this is that we're able to recognize that there are multiple tools available for assessing and describing the work and impact of researchers, and that we need to have a varied and appropriate toolkit. So that's kind of what I'm looking forward to chatting a bit about today. And we have also an exciting slide about some of the context that we might be able to cover in today's conversation.
Excellent. Well, actually, Kristen, I remember we actually started this conversation about a year ago, just after you'd been to the Canadian Association of Research Administrators, which is where I think you followed the track on research assessment and impact, and you were sharing this information with our research facilitators group. And you know, I want to take you back a step to, you know, fill us in. What was happening a year ago at that conference? I mean, they're probably going to discuss it in the conference coming up this month. And you know, what did you learn about DORA at that time? Take us back there. Give us an understanding.
Yeah, that actually reminds me, I haven't even looked at the program for this year, so I really need to figure out what's coming up at the end of the month. But in the meantime, it's been really encouraging to see some developments with DORA in the last few months. So that is the, as you mentioned earlier, the San Francisco Declaration on Research Assessment. And for anybody who hasn't really heard about this, it is a set of principles for how researchers' output is evaluated and assessed by funders, academic institutions, and others. It started as a response to the overuse of one specific measurement tool in research assessment, which was the journal impact factor. And the authors of the declaration argued that this tool, which was initially developed for the purpose of helping libraries decide which journals they should subscribe to, has since been used to assess the work of individual researchers, and that this has major limitations when used in this way. So the declaration, as you can see some of the contents of it here on this slide, urges us to measure research output accurately and wisely, and to recognize that there are a lot of different kinds of research outputs, for example, articles, data sets, highly trained new researchers, and that we should be able to factor all of these things in when we're thinking about how we assess research output. And these principles are really aligned with a lot of other efforts to promote best practices in research assessment, which we'll be able to talk a little bit more about later, I think. But the exciting things that were happening last year at the conference, so first of all, the tri-agencies, as well as a number of other Canadian organizations at that point, had signed on to DORA. So we had some updates from the tri-agencies on that. Which just means that the major funders of research in the Canadian landscape have kind of endorsed the principles of this declaration. And in the meantime, I was checking this morning, so we now have 41 organizations in Canada that have signed. So that's new. I think we were at about 31 the last time you and I looked at this. So we're getting an increase in organizations. Yeah. And over 600 individuals in Canada have now signed. So you can sign as an individual or as an institution. And one of those over 600 people is me. I had not actually signed this time last year. So now I've signed, and I know some of our colleagues at Carleton have done so as well. But more concretely, even just in the last couple of weeks, we're starting to see some really concrete action by the tri-agencies to put these principles into practice. So I don't know if you noticed that NSERC released its new guidelines on the assessment of contributions to research training and mentoring. And those guidelines are explicitly informed by both the tri-agency's EDI action plan and the recommendations from DORA. So the guidelines from NSERC, for example, note that all forms of contributions to research are valued, and they have a whole list of examples that's not meant to be exhaustive. That include publications, which is kind of what we might expect, but also the creation of data sets, support for indigenous ways of knowing, all sorts of things that are maybe not traditionally considered when we're measuring research output. And the guidelines also note, these are the NSERC guidelines informed by DORA. And I'm excited enough about this that I'm going to quote, "The prestige of a publication venue or citation-based metrics, for example, journal impact factor or H-index, must not be used as they introduced bias in the merit review process." So I think what we're really starting to see is some concrete leadership from the Canadian funding agencies in terms of putting the principles of DORA into practice. Yeah, so that's kind of an update on where we are. And I guess, like, maybe a note of caution is that DORA gives us a really great collection of principles for research assessment, but it doesn't give us the tools or the frameworks to actually implement those. And that's one of the reasons it's good to see NSERC kind of figuring out ways to actually implement these. And we know from experience both here in Canada and elsewhere that putting together a framework that actually attempts to follow certain principles or conduct the assessment of research definitely comes with challenges. And I know when we were talking, you and I, Helise, last summer, we were talking about some of the intended consequences and some of the unintended consequences that come out of this. And this is where it gets scary for people, right? Which is true. So, I mean, one of the positive intended consequences we can see from top-down principles or leadership on this is, for example, around knowledge mobilization. So I know we talked about some colleagues of mine in medieval studies who have found that SHRC's requirement for a knowledge mobilization plan in grants has encouraged them to do more sort of community-based work or kind of events at medieval festivals, for example, with a non-academic audience. And I know that people have found that to be quite positive and feel that maybe they wouldn't have done that if they hadn't been nudged in that direction by the agency. But we've also seen that some frameworks or measuring systems can come with negative unintended consequences. And I experienced one of those when I was working in Denmark. I was managing a research center that was based jointly there and in the UK. And one of the things that the very scary UK ref measures is research income, aka grant dollars. We're all familiar with that being measured. And one of the things that we basically did at that research center was make sure to spend money out of the UK side instead of the Danish side sometimes, solely for the purpose of making sure it got counted on the UK side, even though the grant was held at the Danish university and in Danish kroner. Mm-hmm. So we took the hit of the currency conversion and the extra administrative labor it took to do that, solely so that we could make sure everything got counted. So these are some things that we have to think about when we're putting these processes together and trying to figure out how to make everything work without, without causing some negative impacts down the line.
So clearly and this is what people are scared about, right? Because mm-hmm. the publication citation factors can be gamed. And, there's some perverse incentives as well behind mm-hmm. it. In some institutions, I'm working in South Africa with the university, they actually pay authors to publish. And that's ended up being quite a messy show, I can assure you. Just the challenge of, making sure that people are publishing with research intention and not just, just getting publications racked up. So I hear you on this, and you've mentioned now that, the tri-agency is starting to think this, but of course it's just a framework at the moment. And where I'm interested in taking this conversation then is, how do we think of it institutionally, more practically? How do we create tools? How do we develop a system that really can help individual faculty members and or faculties to achieve the research objectives that they want in order to demonstrate research intensiveness or research intensivity?
Yeah, and it's such a challenge, isn't it? So there are a lot of different ways that research is produced, different ways that it's used, and this means that there are a lot of different ways that we can describe its value and its impact. And I mean, I'm using impact in a very broad sense here. Sure. For those of you who are familiar with the UK's term in when we're talking ref, it just means societal impact. Here I mean that, but also scholarly. And this is why any research assessment framework should really use multiple methods or indicators, and that would be really in keeping with some of the best practices that we're aware of. So what we have up on this slide is just some examples of both academic impacts and impacts on society and different kinds of indicators or ways of measuring and assessing and describing this work that we can use. And I should give a shout out to actually that report I mentioned earlier from the Federation for the Humanities and Social Sciences, because I think we kind of borrowed a lot of this information from that report, if I recall correctly, when we first put it together. So if I think again about kind of the relationship between all indicators like this and how we might put them together in a framework, I will use REF again as an example. And I know I keep doing that because it's the one I'm most familiar with.
This is the UK one.
That I think just last week, not caught up on those. I don't work there anymore, so I'm behind an exercise, but the principles still stand. So one of the things that is kind of a positive about the REF is that it incorporates a lot of different indicators, and it makes decisions about which indicators to use based on what's appropriate to the discipline being assessed. So in other words, it compares apples to apples. It does not compare oranges and apples. So an English language and literature department will be benchmarked against other English language and literature departments in this exercise. It will not be compared to a physics department that has a completely different approach to research. And the UK approach also tries to use both qualitative indicators and quantitative ones. So, for example, conducting peer review of research outputs, as well as counting, for example, the number of publications per full-time equivalent faculty members. So there are ways to do both a qualitative and a quantitative approach. But like any framework, sometimes that can have unintended negative consequences. And the exercise in the UK has been adjusted over time for some of these. And I know that right now there are a lot of conversations about just the sheer amount of time it takes to gather information for REF. And people are doing some research into kind of what aspects of that labor could be taken away without changing the value of the results. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there. So if we kind of take a step back and think about the bigger picture of what we've been talking about, a lot of it really is about best practices for research assessment and putting together a framework. And here you can see kind of that example again of the way that the REF is broken down into, so they look at scholarly output, societal impact, and the environment, or kind of the, you know, what's the department like? And there are a whole series of different indicators that are used in all of these, and each one uses both qualitative and quantitative. So if we think about that in terms of best practices for a research assessment framework, and these are where the DORA principles come in, right? Those principles encourage us to use these best practices, but they don't produce the framework for us. So those best practices include things like things we've already been talking about today, quantitative and qualitative, using multiple indicators, making sure it's appropriate for the discipline, making sure that researchers are considered among the primary stakeholders of the framework. We really need to be doing this, you know, in a way from the bottom up, what is important to researchers. Thinking about collective impacts, what has the whole team, field, or discipline contributed, and making sure that the whole system is backed by institutional support so that we are not, in fact, just making researchers do a whole bunch of extra work that nobody has time to do. Those are some of the things that we need to be thinking about as we explore this.
Those are excellent ideas for a framework. Now, my question to you is, you've had some personal experience now working for FAS, because I believe you've... You've developed an inventory for FAS, in my opinion, a very interesting project, because, you know, you have faculty members whose array of work, you know, could include those exhibitions, exhibitions that have been peer reviewed by juries, musicians who are producing public work and, you know, yet aren't getting into publications. So talk us a bit, talk us through what your exercise has entailed and, you know, what you've discovered, what you've learned, what constraints you might have hit. Just tell us more about the project that you've done for FAS.
I'm super excited to have a chance to talk about this because it's been a really fun, although very labor-intensive project to work on. And it partly came out of conversations with our colleagues here at Carleton in research analysis. So we have a team of research analysts. And from a FAS perspective, we wanted to make sure that the research that's done within FAS, and as you say, Elise, that includes a whole variety of different kinds of things. Mm-hmm. We wanted to make sure that all of those things are being recognized and reported on internally, and that we're prepared within FAS to talk about them and kind of advocate for them. And it's a bit of a challenge because a lot of kind of research data analysis will pull, for example, from commercial databases such as Elsevier's SciVal, which can be really useful for some things, but it just doesn't have information on a lot of the stuff that researchers in FAS are doing, whether that is kind of those musical compositions and exhibitions that you referred to, even more traditional scholarly publications, such as monographs that are appearing primarily in print, are not really going to be represented there. So we really wanted to find a way to report on these activities that would kind of hit several goals. We wanted it to be informed by the value of FAS researchers as expressed in unit standards that are used for tenure and promotion in FAS and as expressed by faculty members' CVs, right? That's where we really see what is valued by that discipline and that community of researchers. We wanted it to be as comprehensive as possible and not require more labor from faculty members. And we wanted it eventually to be able to be presented in a CSV file, so something that can be opened and manipulated in Excel so that our research analyst colleagues would actually be able to do something with it. You know, it's not very useful if they can't actually do anything with the data. And a secondary goal for it was to have a database of FAS research activities that we within the FAS research team can use internally so that we're not only relying on our own memory of what 200 plus people are researching across the whole faculty. Mm-hmm. So now we have an extra tool whenever we're trying to figure out, well, who's doing research on what? I don't remember. We have something to rely on beyond kind of our own recollections. So in terms of the actual tools that we use to do this, again, I know that there are some commercial products, for example, that when I was working in Denmark, all the researchers at the university had, we were required to input our information into kind of an institutional database so that you would be able to pull this information. We're not using anything like that here at Carleton. So we came up with a workaround, which is we used Zotero.
Oh, okay.
Now, this was extremely kind of practically driven. We use the tarot mostly because I'm familiar with it and I knew we would be able to get the project started quickly if we use a tool I already know and understand.
Mm-hmm.
So for anyone who's not familiar with the tarot, it's designed to be a bibliography, note-taking, and citation sort of software. Mm-hmm. I love it. I use it in my own research all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And we can also export from that into a CSV format. So you can export from Zotero into Excel. And how did we get the entries in there? So this is me and a couple of my colleagues, and I also had a really great work study student working on this project. So that really helped because it was really labor intensive. But we pulled from faculty members' CVs from 2015 to 2019.
Wow.
That was, in retrospect, maybe arguably too ambitious,
mm-hmm.
But we did it. And we ended up with over 3,000 items.
Wow.
In the database at this time. And that includes item types such as the ones that you've mentioned. So we've got exhibitions, but we've also got journal articles, film series, and film screenings, media interviews, musical compositions, all sorts of things. So far, I'm really happy with it, and we are planning to keep working with this and update it on a yearly basis. There are obviously also some downsides to kind of the method that we chose. So for anybody else thinking of doing this, here are my warnings. One, Zotero does not contain the kind of item type categories that you might not have the categories that you need, right? So for me, it definitely didn't have all the categories that I needed. We figured out a way around that. We used primarily the tagging function to classify things in the item types that we wanted to use. But of course, from Zotero's perspective, its job is to produce the correct bibliography entry. Its job is not to classify this according to what type of thing it is. Mm-hmm. So we had to kind of manipulate the software a little. It did work. But also, it was just really, really labor-intensive. So if anybody has any ideas that would make this less labor-intensive, please let me know, because we are planning to keep updating this. Surely going not 5 years back is a good way to start in terms of making it take a little bit less time. One other thing I wanted to add on that is that it has also enabled us to, first of all, for me, it was a really good crash course in what's going on within FAST. I was a new research facilitator at the time, and now when I meet new to me faculty members in FAST, I kind of immediately picture their Zotero entries in my brain. So I now know, oh, right, you work on that. Mm-hmm. But the other thing is, it's really given us a good tool for collaboration with our colleagues in communications in FAST. So if they're looking, for example, for a researcher who might be able to contribute something for Black History Month, for example, mm-hmm. we're not relying only on our own memory. We can also search the database, so we can do both of those things. And it's also enabled us to kind of make connections between themes and research methods that, again, we might not have made organically, mm-hmm. and that are helping to inform a research publication, actually, that our comms team is working on that's going to be organized thematically in 4 strands. So stay tuned for that coming out in the fall. So it's all been very exciting.
That's a lot of work. That's incredible. I can already see the potential of making it available to more than just the communication colleagues, myself mm-hmm. at International, for instance. The role I play in, you know, facilitating international research collaboration, I would definitely want to know more about your faculty members' research profiles. But more importantly, have you had conversations with the library about how mm-hmm. to host it and to make it an open access database?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So we haven't actually gone there yet. I know I did speak with some of the colleagues in the library when I first started and was trying to figure out what tools or databases might already exist. And I think I mentioned, I don't remember in what context, that I did at one point use some of the institutional database repository, rather, run out of the library to inform some of the database. Although in the end, I found that I did need to kind of stick to the CVs in order to make it more comprehensive. But all that to say, I think that is a really good idea for a next step. And again, one of the reasons that I liked the idea of using Zotero, at least in the short term, is that it is possible to make a library publicly accessible. So I haven't done that step yet, and I would say that I have enough data entry error cleanup to do that we're not ready to do that yet. But that is one of the reasons that I was kind of excited about using this software, is that we know we can do that. And in the meantime, if there's anybody at Carleton who wants has a question that this database might be able to answer, please ask me, and we will be able to use it for a variety of things. I'm super excited to be able to kind of think more broadly about the applications of this going forward.
So you've already mentioned your connection with the information manager in research in OBPRI, mm-hmm. And so it'd be very interesting to know if you've developed any kind of trends or tools or visualization from that. Have you done that?
Yeah. So we're not, I was about to say we're not there yet, but the truth is I don't know. So we're at the stage where I have exported all of the information into Excel and given it to our wonderful colleagues. And the last I heard, I know Matthew at least had some questions for me about it, but I don't yet know what those questions are.
Okay. So that's in the works. It's in the works.
It's in progress.
It's in progress. Perfect.
It's in progress. So yeah, now, which, again, super excited about.
So that's like internal liaison and communication and making use of the data. But what should Carleton be doing? I mean, what should the other faculties be thinking about? You know, I mean, maybe the STEM faculties are saying, well, you know, we covered by, the regular you know, Scopus, Cyval, or are we not? What do you think the other faculties could be taking from your experience, mm-hmm. Maybe building upon it? I mean, I'm thinking particularly then also of the Faculty for Public Affairs, and I mean, mm-hmm. not to mention the Faculty for Postgraduate Affairs. I mean, there must be tons of research that is that we should be taking account of, that might not be going into the journals with impact factors and so forth. Let's think more broadly. Who should we be speaking to, I guess, do a more appreciative inquiry around what a database like this could mean for Carleton?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a really good question. And, you know, we've been doing some thinking about what the implications are nationally of some of these conversations and what some of the implications are specifically at Carleton. So I think one of the take-home messages is it doesn't matter what the discipline is, best practices in research assessment are still important, right? So for anyone who feels, okay, I'm covered in Cyval and Scopus, to a certain extent, yes, that's true, but there are still a ton of things that people in those disciplines are doing that is not captured in those databases. In addition to which, we know that some of the metrics that are captured in systems like that disadvantage certain areas. So we know when we look at things like citation counts, researchers who are publishing in English, who are later in their careers, who are members of more privileged social groups, do tend to do better in those numbers. So there is always an element of privilege and access that we need to think about regardless of what system that we're using. So I think we do need to be thinking about this more broadly, regardless of the discipline, and knowing that using methods appropriate to that discipline is always one of the foundations of a framework. So thinking again of kind of implications within the Canadian landscape, we know from the tri-agencies having signed on that the conversation has already started here. We know from some of the conversations we were hearing at CARA last year that some universities are starting to develop internal frameworks. We heard some chatter at the conference about the potential for working groups at CARA and possibly with the Canadian Science Policy Conference. And I know that one of the threads that kind of linked the conversations I was hearing last year at CARA was the idea that if as a research community in Canada, we don't take some proactive measures around this, frameworks are going to be imposed upon us.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we do all experience that to a certain extent with the drive to produce metrics that result in good rankings in international ranking systems, mm. right? I would argue that is a framework that
yes.
we are participating in. It's just one we
default.
Don't acknowledge.
Exactly.
By default.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And I would much rather see us proactively, both in Canada and at Carleton, I would much rather see us proactively recognize that whether we like it or not, these frameworks are happening. And it would be much better for us to be part of a conversation around that. And, you know, maybe involve people from multiple faculties at Carleton, pay some attention to the national conversations that are going on. I don't know about you, but I would love to see us as an institutional signatory to DORA.
Mm-hmm.
And I would encourage anyone who takes an interest in this, you can always go look at the DORA website. It's sfdora.org. You can read the declaration. If it suits your thinking, you can also always sign as an individual.
Mm-hmm.
So I would like to see us having some conversations between different faculties and at different levels of the university, really, around some of these issues.
That, you know, that's so practical. And I think that, you know, part of the reason for this podcast was to take the conversation beyond Rosie, our research facilitators network, and to bring it to you know, a more general audience, because I think that universities are really in the driving seat at the moment because these frameworks haven't yet been fixed. It's rather dynamic. The situation is fluid. And I think we could certainly through participation, through through a more, as you mentioned earlier, a bottom up disciplinary, discipline specific response to this opportunity, create this diverse framework, which I think will suit other, you know, other disciplines that to date have felt excluded really from the journal impact factor citation values and so forth. So I really appreciate this conversation, Kristen. It's something that's dear to your heart, and I know it's dear to mine. And I feel as though, you know, you and I started circumambulating this topic when we realized that as research facilitators, we were kind of stuck in this triangle of having to support the university, which has the aspiration of improving its rankings, becoming more globally recognized, which puts a certain imperative, you know, ahead of the individual researcher. And yet, as the individual researchers also are seeking to grow their visibility, their career, their research impact, you know, it seems as though they have similar aspirations, but they're not necessarily meeting at the middle point. And they certainly as a career ladder or career progression, I guess imperatives need to somehow meet each other at a midpoint. And it feels to me as that this is a great opportunity for us now, given the shift in the tri-agency's perspective on it, to invite Carleton University to this conversation, and possibly hope that and nudge leadership to create the space for this conversation to start happening, and for Carleton to, you know, make a mark in developing a framework that really works for faculty members and for the institution. So,
agreed.
Yeah, I think this is a great start, and thank you so much for the initiatives that you've taken, for the professionalism that you've demonstrated in your ability to harness what did you say, 200 faculty members research outputs. It's wonderful, and I look forward to seeing that database becoming more available. I look forward to Carleton collaborating with others nationally as well to take us through DORA and to have a CU DORA chapter. Yeah, it'll be good.
Agreed.
Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for this conversation, Heloise.
Thank you. Now, please don't go. I'm gonna say, I gotta stop the conversation here.
Recording stopped.
You know what happened? I'm recording in a voice recorder as well.
Yeah.
And I noticed that it wasn't running at your introduction.
Okay.
So starting at now, 34 minutes, I'm going to go back to the beginning. I'm so sorry to do this. It's literally only my introduction to you, of you.
Yeah.
And then your introduction of yourself, that we can just re-record that, if we may.
Absolutely. However, I'm going to throw a wrinkle in it, which is I'm now 5 minutes late for a meeting about a grant that I really need to go to.
We can do this another time.
Can you when that meeting is done today, if you want to do it today. So I will, I'm just going to see if I can get Diptos already to go.